You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day.
Man, I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade, and nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King locked on trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game is very important, Millie.
Welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for making us part of your regular routine. We're here for you often enough in July, even when there's not a whole lot to talk about. But me, Jay King, the Rain and Jays, we are here to discuss a bunch of things. You know, Summer League's over. We'll catch up on Summer League. Final thoughts on that. The big, major breaking news of Walt Lemon signing a two-way deal, maybe, sort of. And then Al Horford, there's a report today about Al Horford not signing an extension, which makes sense. And Marcus Smart's options are basically down to one team. So we're all back from Las Vegas. Jay, I feel bad. Like we just never could connect in Vegas long enough to do a podcast, except for that one day.
We had that beautiful day, though.
It was. This year's Summer League was so different than last year's, because last year I think we were always done by like 5 o'clock. It was very easy to like grab somebody, grab a 12 pack or a 24 pack, head back to the hotel, bust out a podcast, and then still have time to like shower, go to dinner, go out at night, do your work, whatever. This year, they had games that were starting at 8 p.m. local time. By the time you got out of there and got done with your work, it was like 11:30, and just didn't have time to podcast.
It was brutal. Those goddamn
schedule.
Goddamn Summer League. It's gotten too big.
It's become part of your daily grind. That beat. What it used to be was like this fun kind of almost convention type atmosphere where all the writers would go and everybody would kind of hang out, and you'd write a little bit about the games, and it wasn't too crazy. And then afterwards, everybody kind of got a chance to hang out and schmooze. People, you know, writers talk to players, talk to agents, talk to coaches, and everybody just kind of got to know each other a little bit. And this year, it definitely didn't seem like there was as much of that going on. But look, the NBA, for the fans, it's kind of a fun thing. Excuse me. And it's become just a big event. The NBA is basically, I want to say, probably a 10-month-a-year league at this point. You still have August and September, which can be dicey.
Yeah, yeah. I yearn for the days when we had more rest. And now Kawhi is still out there. Kawhi Leonard is still out there, which is going to ruin some beats August.
Oh, my God. Yeah, totally. Totally. What if he gets traded to Toronto in 3 weeks? Like, that's going to be wild. And he's now eligible for the Supermax, so who knows what the hell is going to happen with that. But, yeah, he's still out there. They're still, you know, we've got Marcus Smart out there.
I bet Dennis Schroeder is going to get traded. Big Dennis Schroeder trade coming up.
You think Atlanta making moves?
Yeah, they just acquired Jeremy Lin. They got Trae Young. Goodbye, Dennis Schroeder.
Yeah, makes sense. Oh, boy, that big Dennis Schroeder trade.
Yep, watch out.
Yeah, well, so basically now we're talking about like a 10-and-a-half-month year. Look, Kyrie's trade happened, what, last August, right?
On my 30th birthday.
So we've got all that. But Summer League is over for us anyway. There's still two games left. But let's wrap this sucker up with just a couple of final thoughts from the Celtics Summer League. I thought the biggest producers in Summer League were the guys that we didn't expect. I expected Shimi Ojeleye to do a lot more statistically, which I think because he was working on some other things, he just wasn't focused on just going and getting his and dominating. We had Gershon Yabusele kind of pick up as the summer league wound down and did well. But I think, like, Jabari Bird had the biggest splash. Some of the other, like, Pierre Henry played pretty well and was, I think, notable. That's about it, really.
Hassan Martin.
Hassan Martin did well, but I hear people talking about Hassan Martin, like, getting a potential two-way deal from the Celtics. I don't think Hassan Martin, as well as he played in summer league, I don't know that he's an NBA player. I think because he's 6'7", and he's just almost strictly a post player, I don't know that that's going to translate to the NBA level. Like, in summer league, it's fine. And if he goes to a league somewhere overseas that has that level of competition, he'll do well and make plenty of money. I don't know that if you put him in the NBA against bigger, stronger guys, that he's going to be able to do what he did in summer league.
My man shot 63.6% last year in Japan.
Yeah, that's Japan. He should go back to Japan.
Two-time Atlantic 10 Conference Defensive Player of the Year.
I know. URI's own. Rhode Island's own. But doesn't change my mind. Like I said, he's a beast. He's a big dude. I mean, he's definitely Ogilvy factory, you know, worthy. Like, he is a big monster man. But I still just don't see him being able to get much going at the NBA level. I think he can go back and play, you know, go back to Japan or go into China or go into Europe somewhere and make his money.
There you go.
That's my Hassan Martin take. But not
you come here for the hot Hassan Martin takes. That's
yeah.
It.
Yeah.
That's what we're here for.
Or the hot Walt Lemon Jr. about to sign. Nothing official yet, I guess, but he's going to sign a two-way deal with the Celtics. You know, see you later, Kadeem Allen. Was a nice try, but they're gonna give their that spot to another 6'3 point guard. Which the only notable thing here is that it's another point guard, and I just think it's interesting that.
Why is that notable?
Well, I don't know, because the Celtics have two, you know, a free agent point guard on the market right now, and a potential free agent point guard on the market next year.
But this is a two-way contract. Like, they had Kadeem Allen last year. That at no point was notable. No offense to Kadeem Allen, I guess.
No offense to Kadeem Allen. And I'm saying it's just, I think it's interesting that it's another point guard. Could mean nothing. Probably means nothing. But, hey, look, they got Jabari Bird, and Jabari Bird is notable. I think Jabari Bird, depending on how things shake out, I think Jabari Bird should be off the two-way deal and just on a regular guaranteed NBA contract.
Yeah, he's looking for it. I mean, he stated a strong case. He had a really good summer league. The one thing I question about him is his three-point stroke. And he kind of came out of college with a reputation as a shooter, but he was only 32.5% in the G League last year. He only took 1.2 threes a game during summer league. So that's what you want to see from him more. But he's a super intelligent offensive player, like, really smart scorer. Shot just about 52% in the G League last year. Shot 50-some-odd percent in the summer league this year. Did a really nice job when he's with the Celtics. He seems like a guy, just whatever opportunity has come his way, he's kind of seized it. And so I've been impressed by him so far.
Yeah, I think he's good. He's good enough to be an NBA player. I know he wants to be an NBA player. He is not interested in going overseas at all. And he'll stick around. If he has to stick around on a two-way deal, he'll do it, I'm sure. But he's a restricted free agent. I don't know if anybody's going to offer him anything above the minimum. I think if anybody offers him anything slightly above the minimum, then they could probably have him, because I don't know if the Celtics are going to pay him more than that. But I think he's worth a shot. And depending on how the Marcus Smart thing works out, maybe there's a spot for him. So, speaking of Marcus Smart, he's basically down to the Sacramento Kings.
Or like a Hail Mary sign and trade deal.
Yeah, but it would have to be.
It would be a Hail Mary.
And signing and trading, and I'm not 100% familiar with how the rules go, But signing and trading a restricted free agent makes him, I think it makes him a base year contract. And that affects when, let me see if I can get this right.
Let's just say it would be really tough to do.
Going out, he counts for like 100% of the what he's making, but coming in, he counts for half. And even if that's wrong, one way or the other, the salary, his salary, whatever he gets, if it's $15 million, it doesn't count as $15 million for one team. And that makes it very difficult to match the salaries. And thus, a sign and trade for Marcus Smart becomes very, very difficult. I'll just leave it at that. It's not just cut and dry, sign him, match the salaries, and it's done. It's a very difficult thing to do. So that leads. So you got that option and the Sacramento Kings, who a week ago were allegedly preparing an offer sheet for him, and that has seemed to kind of disappear. The reason why they're the only team left, Atlanta made their trade for Jeremy Lin, so they don't have the cap space right now to give Marcus Smart anything good. The Chicago Bulls just signed Jabari Parker from got him from Milwaukee. So they're giving him $20 million. So there goes that cap space. So first of all, $20 million. I know it's basically a second-year team option, but, man, $20 million for Jabari Parker next year, and we're sitting
it's
here.
It's 1 year. I think I like that for the Bulls, actually. It's 1 year for a guy who can really score the rock, who's 6'8", can move, talented, doesn't always play defense, didn't have the best first two games of the playoffs. But I think he's worth taking a flyer on. I've loved Jabari Parker's talent for a long time. I think if he gets healthy, if he figures some things out, he could be really tough to stop. And just having him on 1 year, I like that for the Bulls with a team option. But yeah, Marcus Smart, the market just broke wrong for him. And I think it's been proven so far that the Celtics kind of read this right. And they kind of just let Smart try to find his an offer sheet, and it just hasn't happened so far. And I think some teams that like him don't think he's worth enough that they could have lured him from the Celtics. So maybe the Kings, who knows what the Kings are thinking. Obviously when you're a bad team, using cap space to take bad contracts from other teams is always an option. So who knows? They might not have cap space that they actually intend to use on free agents. So Marcus Smart, maybe he'll sign the qualifying offer. Maybe he and the Celtics can sit down once all his options are kind of exhausted and see if they can hammer something longer term out. But it just did not break well for him. And it's too bad because I do think some guys who haven't accomplished as much as he has over his career will be getting paid more than him or have gotten contracts that kind of suit them. And he's just sitting there like, what the hell, man?
I know. I feel bad, but this is the restricted free agent dance that we always talked about. And we knew going in that unless something broke right, this was probably going to be how it went. This was not hard to predict that a restricted free agent in a market where not a lot of people had money, and that money went quickly, and the few teams that were left that could do something did something else. And now you're right. Like, I thought Chicago should have waited. I thought Chicago should have spent this year. I think they kind of rushed into a team. Like, yeah, I can see arguing that they take a flyer on Jabari Parker, but I don't think Parker and Levine and Markkanen is going to get you very far. I think now Sacramento is the only team left that can talk to Oklahoma City and say, all right, we'll take Carmelo Anthony. What are you going to give us for it? And when you're in that position, you're better off just taking Carmelo Anthony, getting the asset, playing whatever buyout game there is, and just accumulating another draft pick. Even if it's a low first-round draft pick, late first-round draft pick, that's fine because you probably get a useful or maybe get a useful rotation player or role player down at that part of the draft. Or maybe you take a swing at a Mitchell Robinson type, you know, a Robert Williams type that can, you know, somebody who dropped. Maybe you have some sort of reclamation project over there. I'm not so sure Sacramento is going to be the place to pull that off, but in theory, that's the thing. So I think the market for Smart is done. Like he's either going to come back to Boston on the qualifying offer, or he's got to sit there and talk to them about something else. And I don't think the qualifying offer is a smart play for Marcus, because we've had now over 40 one-year deals signed this free agency, this summer's free agency. Next summer, you've got 5 or 6 big names hitting the market that are going to command dollars. And I think next year, the money's going to dry up pretty quickly too. And I don't know that Marcus Smart is going to be in that initial burst of free agents. The only advantage he has now is that he's unrestricted and the team doesn't have to worry about overpaying him to lure him away from the Celtics.
Yeah, I think the unrestricted thing would be the real pull of that qualifying offer. And then, you know, it wouldn't take a lot for Marcus Smart to convince a team that he's like, let's say he, for whatever, by whatever stroke of God, shoots like 35-36% from behind the arc. All of a sudden, the numbers on his deal start to change. And the thinking about him starts to change from, okay, this guy will never improve offensively, to maybe he can be a halfway decent shooter in addition to everything else he does. So I do think there's an upside to Smart taking the qualifying offer. I do think there's also a risk because of, like you said, all the guys who are going to enter free agency again next summer. So he's just, the market, like I said, it's just broken really bad for him, and it's too bad for him. And I don't think he was prepared for it. I'm not sure that he realized just how tough it was going to be out there for him. I think the way he looks at it, I'm sure if I were him, I'd look at it like, okay, I was just in the closing lineup for a team that almost made the NBA Finals. I literally closed out the Philadelphia 76ers with the strangest like sequence of plays in Game 5. My return may have swung the Milwaukee series in my team's way. It's possible my team may not have even gotten out of the first round without me. And I'm sure he looks at it like, this is strange. Everybody's undervaluing me. And he's always been a guy that kind of fights through adversity like that. And so I wouldn't be shocked if he kind of bets on himself with the qualifying offer and thinks he could have a good year and thinks that things will change if he hits free agency again next year.
Yeah, okay. He can value himself that way. I think his agent is kind of screwed him a little bit, because his agent's supposed to be a little bit of a voice of reason and say, okay, you value yourself this way. We have to understand what the market is, and you have to understand that we will pursue, we want, let's just say it's $15 million. But if this scenario plays out, because you're restricted, it could run out fast. And these are your options. Now, maybe he did. Maybe I'm wrong. And maybe he did lay that out. And Marcus Smart said, screw it, we're going for it. This is what I want. And forget it. So I think one way or another, somebody, one or both people there, read this market wrong. And I put the onus on the agent to make sure that you get the best deal for your client. And I just don't think the qualifying offer is the best deal for his client. Obviously, I've been harping on a 2-year deal, which I think made sense. But whatever. That's where we are. We're also at the point where we're talking about an Al Horford extension. Al Horford can opt out of his deal next year, which is a $30 million deal. Or the Celtics can extend. They could offer up an extension of that deal. Ben Roebuck on his Patreon, the Parquet Post, said today that his team source said basically that they're not going to offer an extension, which when you hear it on the surface, it sounds bad, but I think it's actually makes perfect sense because if you offer an extension, you got to start at $30 million and you give them raises from there. I think what makes the most sense for the Celtics and Al Horford is if he really thinks that he can go out after next season and make $15 to $20 million, then maybe he keeps that $30 million and goes into free agency and maybe tries to work something out. I think it makes the most sense because of the rules. There's this over 38 rule, which is complicated, but basically it's a mechanism where teams can't pay players over 38. It counts on the cap weirdly. If Al Horford opts out of that $30 million and takes a five-year deal, he finishes that deal while staying under 38, so there's no weird cap crazy hit. The Celtics can offer him an amount of money that they can argue you won't get over the next 5 years of your career otherwise. And the Celtics' benefit is they get a lower per year average annual salary, so that decreases the possibility of going into the tax, or at least lessens the tax bill. I think what ultimately makes sense is Al Horford opts out of $30 million, gets a new five-year deal that starts at a mutually beneficial number that keeps the Celtics under the tax or gets that lower tax bill, and Horford gets a five-year security to play out the rest of his career with the Boston Celtics.
I wouldn't be shocked by that path at all. I think from his standpoint, that kind of makes sense. I think if he has another really good year, he could potentially get big money over like a three-year deal if he opts out. But I think a five-year deal, that type of security, he's going to be 33 a year from now when he has the opportunity to opt out. I think that makes a whole lot of sense the way I look at it.
Yeah, look, when you're at that age, that five-year, that guaranteed money, I think it resonates a little bit more than whatever, you know, whip it out and measure it against whatever big contracts are out there. I don't think that matters. And I don't think Al Horford's the type of guy to kind of waste his money. So I feel like whatever five-year deal, and I don't know what that number is, I want to say if you can keep it, if you can start that first year at under $20 million a year, somewhere around 17, 18, and then give raises from there, you'll be okay. And look, at the end, if he is 36 and for some reason no longer useful or the Celtics end up being too expensive, it probably could be a tradable deal at the tail end of the contract to a younger team that wants 2 years of a veteran to kind of help mold them, whatever team is rebuilding at the time, you know, like in Atlanta or Chicago right now.
Do you think the Nets will be looking for another run at it?
At that point, it'd be what? Al Horford and Gordon Hayward for...
for seven first-round picks, all unprotected?
Oh, my God. Can you imagine if Danny does it again? Oh, my God. That would be amazing. If he ended up trading an Al Horford, a 36-year-old Al Horford to the Nets for multiple draft picks, that would just be like, I would lose my mind. Let's wrap things up here with a story that Jay King did for The Athletic. It's Brad Stevens' summer reading list. Want to give us a little gist of what the story is, Jay?
Basically, Brad Stevens reads a lot. I thought the funniest part of the story was when he said that he used to read James Patterson novels but gave up reading for fun 15 years ago, which was essentially when he got into the coaching profession. Like, the guy hasn't read a damn book for pleasure since he became a coach. That's just outrageous to me. That is such an insane use, an insanely efficient usage of his time. Like what kind of dude just cuts things out like that? Only a very dedicated soul. So that was probably my favorite part. But it was just about all the books he does read, and they're all about trying to improve, whether it's at coaching or parenting or real life. And he has a long list of favorites, and I was interested by all that stuff, which is why I wrote the story. I don't know if anyone else was interested in it, but it was interesting to me.
I thought it was interesting. Well, first of all, the point that I did want to bring up was the fact that he just stopped reading for pleasure 15 years ago, and it did coincide with his entry into the coaching ranks and his explosion as a head coach. And that's it. That's perfectly Brad. And you know what? I always say this about everybody who's super successful. You got to have some sort of weird mental thing that drives you. And like, this is like one of the symptoms that he just, all he reads now is motivational books and things that could maybe give him an advantage. He's not wasting his time with some spy thriller, some submarine going down in the, you know, Bering Sea or whatever. Like, no, it's all about coaching and like motivation and what can I get to squeeze an extra, you know, 5 points out of my team? What passage can I get out of this book? What author can I invite into a practice to motivate my guys? Which it's an interesting look into Brad Stevens and what makes him tick.
And I didn't put this in the story, but he also listens to a lot of podcasts, and very few.
He's a big Rant Jays fan, right? Gotta be.
Highly unlikely. He doesn't really listen to basketball podcasts. He listens to like improvement podcasts that could somehow relate to basketball. But he said he's always listening to podcasts, always reading books, and they're all linked to coaching in some way, even though very few of them are directly linked to coaching. So I thought it was interesting, but
it is interesting. It's super interesting. It's, you know, you try to piece together the Brad Stevens story, you know, all the little things that what makes him go, what makes him tick, what makes him become such a great coach. And this is one of it. This is one of those things that this is reading, listening to motivational stuff, whatever. It's interesting. All right. I hope this podcast was interesting enough. Brad, I know you're listening out there, buddy. I hope it was good enough for you guys to subscribe wherever you find your podcast. Search for Locked On Celtics. Hope it's good enough for you to give us that 5-star rating and for you to write a good review, because that always helps us out. Each 5-star rating, each listen, each review gives a little tick up the rankings, up the ladder, and it helps us out a lot. So do that and make sure you share the podcast and tell all your friends to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah. King and John Corrales, Locked On Celtics.